All right, we're back. Jason and John, I did Turn FM ESPN. And I was sitting around yesterday all weekend, and I was trying to think, like, who should I have? Who should I have on my show to talk about Memphis football? So many great players, right? But if I can't get D'Angelo Williams, if I can't get Joe Doss, if I can't get Danny Wimprine, I went down a list of about 255 players.
I know it took a while. To get to my name.
The Vol Slayer, Chris Powers, former Memphis tight end, one of my favorite guys here with us today.
Hey, let me start by saying thanks for having me on.
Yes.
I'm a big fan of the show. I listen all the time. But where's Calkins?
Where is Calkins? Do we know?
I thought you had a show with Calkins.
That was a long time ago.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, you were.
That's the first lie I've told today.
Yeah, you were in Germany. That was when I had the show with Calkins. That's when I started.
Well, that's what. So last night when you texted me, you said, "Hey, can you come do the show?" I was all excited to see Jeff.
Oh wow. Okay.
It may have been a different answer if I knew that you were. So who broke up with who?
That's fair.
Who left who?
I got this show.
Okay.
Only 10 years ago.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Where have you been in a coma?
No.
That's amazing.
I've been living life.
I respect.
Hey, but John, I'm really happy for you.
Yeah, clearly. Yeah. This is great.
I'm a big fan.
My guy thinks I'm still producing Calkins.
That's crazy.
But in all seriousness, very glad to have you in. How about that, man? I mean, you know what it feels like to beat an SEC team. You know what it feels like, you know, that validation. Not that Arkansas is on the same level of that Tennessee team, for example, but just for Memphis. How good a day was that?
Yeah, it was huge, right? Because you look at the landscape of college football now, and you look at where we are with NIL, with the transfer portal, and who has this money, who doesn't have money, and it's an uphill battle. And so when you can line up against a team that has every resource that they could possibly imagine, and you go toe-to-toe and you beat them, yeah, it's really satisfying. So in SEC school, you know, across the river – but again, it's Arkansas, right?
I
mean, I think, what are we, 4-2 against them?
Yeah.
So,
that'll be it.
That game in Fayetteville, it's not going to happen.
No, there's no way. I didn't think it was going to happen before the game, and now it's definitely not. You know, and again, like, I think that's, you know, it kind of sucks because it's like Memphis has shown it's in the league of these teams, but it's not. It's not in the league. It's literally not in the league of these teams.
It's not set up to be in the same league.
Right, exactly.
Right? It's just the way it is right now.
It's oppression is what it is. It's just oppression. And
we need to stand up.
They've tried, man. They sued the NCAA over Wiseman. You know, that didn't help. I mean, that's the part of it that is the trade. It's like, you know, you get these games and you win them and you show the nation, hey, don't forget about Memphis football. We're still doing it big down here. And, like, the immediate reaction sort of nationally is going to be, let's not bring them around. Let's not touch Memphis because we know what they can do.
Well, what does it do for a Power 4 team?
Nothing.
Right? What's it do for Arkansas to have the game in Fayetteville?
Nothing.
Nothing. If you win, you're supposed to win.
That's
if you lose, the coach better be finding somewhere to go next year. Right?
Well, I'm not even sure. That's the thing. I'm not even sure, like, you're supposed to win anymore. Like with Memphis now, it's like it may be a coin flip.
It's like Southern Miss back in the 90s.
Yeah.
I know you probably weren't born yet.
I was born in 91, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So about the same time you were born. And Southern Miss would go anywhere and play anybody. That was kind of their rallying cry.
Mm-hmm.
And then they beat a bunch of teams, and people quit scheduling them.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, and again, like, the good thing for Memphis is that in some ways, not in the most important ways, but I'm just sort of coping here. But in some ways, you prefer this current path because if Memphis was like if they were in the Big 12, right? You know, you're gonna have to fight your ass off to finish in the top half of that league. It's better, right? It's not the best, but it's better. But in the current setup, maybe you're not predisposed to being able to play Arkansas or Ole Miss or Tennessee in the non-conference. But like you're actually set up pretty well to see him in the playoff.
Oh, does Memphis have a better shot? Not just this year, every year. In general, does Memphis have a better shot to go to the playoff than Vanderbilt?
Easily.
Yeah, Missouri?
Easily.
Ole Miss?
Easily.
Yeah, right?
Ole Miss is on a high level, but they have to win those games.
But who do they have to go through?
That's exactly right.
Right?
That's
all
exactly
the teams
right.
in the West.
Yes.
So,
yes.
You know, I would take my chances with Memphis. Now, look, here they are, mm-hmm. right? They've gotten to where they are in the season. They beat Arkansas. Now they got to go do it, right?
Yes.
Win the games that you're supposed to win.
Yes.
And they got to put a whole season together, which would be, you know, that would get them where we hope they go.
I think, you know, just from a big picture standpoint, as opposed to just sort of the granular level with the team, like the idea that the floor is this high for Memphis, like it's almost inconceivable, because not long ago, I mean, only 15 years ago, it was the Larry Porter era. It was the, you know, end of the Tommy era. And it was like, if you won five games, it was like, all right, okay.
So Tommy turned it around, right?
Yes.
In the early 2000s.
Yes.
And then Larry was here for 2 years.
Yes.
And yeah, that was a step backwards for sure. But then that got turned around relatively quick.
Yeah. Yeah.
Once Fuente got in and he got it rolling, and then Norvell kept it going. So, I mean, we're looking at, gosh, I mean, we're coming up on 25 years of good football being played at Memphis.
Yeah. Largely. Yeah, exactly. And I just think, you know, when Fuente got it, there were some, you know, there was, I guess, maybe some doubt as to where it was going to go. But I don't know who it was driving the decision. I don't know exactly what sparked the flame, but it does feel like at some point in his tenure, somebody over there woke up. Right, like it's
Paxton Lynch woke up.
Paxton Lynch,
right?
Yeah.
You go get a 6'7" kid out of Central Florida that was a 2-star or something like that, kind of take a flyer on him, bring him up.
Yeah,
you know, I doubt that they projected that Paxton Lynch would be a 1st-round draft pick.
Yes,
when they recruited him.
Yes,
but you look at, they had got Paxton, they had Anthony Miller, who was a walk on, Alan Cross was a walk on, so you had a bunch of guys.
The list goes on.
Yeah,
huh?
that played really well, and that's what got it rolling. So,
and then the administration, right? I mean, you know, I think that's the biggest thing is, like, I mean, I don't know how it, you know, was in terms of, you know, when you were there, and I don't even know if they.
So here's how it was when I was here. When I came to my recruiting trip in 1993, the winter of 93, it was the old complex. So everything that you see over there at South Campus was not there. And we went over to South Campus, and there was a old natatorium with a pool, indoor pool. And then there was a field next to it, and they had a backhoe out in the middle of the field, and it had dug a hole, maybe about 8 feet deep, and piled the dirt up. And then you walk into the front door of the complex, and they had a rendering of what the new complex is going to look like. And they say, yeah, we already broke ground on the new complex. They didn't finish that thing till 6 years after I left.
Wow.
And so now, right? So I'm like, this is great. This is great, right? Yeah, in Memphis, they're doing all this stuff, and I'm going to sign here and come to school here. And, when I came back that fall to start camp as a freshman, the hole was filled in and the backhoe was gone and the drawing was gone. It was no longer in the complex. And then the next year, I'm hosting recruits, high school recruits that are coming in. Guess what was back? The backhoe, the hole, and the rendering in the entryway of the complex. So that's, to answer your question, that's what I was dealing with.
I mean, and I think at some point, you know, maybe it was that 2014 year with Paxton when they win the league, right? They win a share of the AAC championship, where it was like, all right, we can do this. I think that might have been a part of the hesitation, is like, maybe there was skepticism on, like, okay, we have ambition, but should we have ambition?
Well, the resources that you have to commit to a football program are much greater than basketball.
No doubt.
Basketball, I mean, look at NIL. Look, it's just the scale is different. And so it takes a lot more to have a successful football program than basketball, which we had historically. And so that was a big shift. But, you know, the BCS and the money is what led us there.
Yes.
Right? I mean, once the money went way up through the roof, and you see what the potential payout is and the potential benefits.
Yes.
That's when that shift.
There's no doubt. And, you know, listen, this program has shown that it belongs with, you know, certainly the Big 12. I mean, if you put them in the Big 12, they immediately become. I mean, Oklahoma State's an embarrassment. They lost to Tulsa over the weekend. Kansas State lost
to
Army.
For all my Oklahoma State friends who are listening, he didn't mean that.
Do you have Oklahoma State people? I mean, I did mean it. That was embarrassing. Losing to Tulsa? You kidding me? Jeez.
Wow. All right. He did mean that. Sorry.
I did mean it. And then there was one more that happened. I can't remember off the top of my head. But, like, Memphis football would be, you know, immediately, I feel like, a top half. You know, because then they start getting the Big 12 resources. You know, that's the thing, is like, give this Memphis football program, like, give this university those types of resources.
Put them on a level playing field?
Man.
Because we're knocking it out of the park with what we do have.
No question.
And have for a long time now.
Yes.
So,
I think that's the part that I lament. I just, you know, whether it, the whole university, that's a big time university. They've improved the academics from when you were there. I mean, that was basically when you were there, it was a diploma mill, you know, and now it's an R1 Carnegie University.
Where'd you go?
I went later.
After it was a diploma mill. Yeah. Okay, all right.
No, I went back when there was credibility, right? Academically, I went.
Yeah.
That was in the early 2000s, mid 2000s.
Unbelievable.
You know, you went with a night. Come on, man.
Brad, this may be the last time I'm in studio.
I know. Every day, this is what we do. You know.
What was your degree in?
I got a business degree.
You got a business degree. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Do you use it?
Yeah, I do business every day.
What kind of business are you over there doing?
Well, I'm in the business of flying airplanes. Okay. At FedEx.
So that's there you go.
Nice.
Yeah. Memphis?
Yeah. FedEx. So yeah, I got a degree in that that allowed.
That's exactly allowed me to do that. A University of Memphis degree will help you fly planes with FedEx.
Yeah.
I think that's actually a great recruiting pitch. You want to fly planes for FedEx? You can come to the University of Memphis.
Well, I used to stand at practice on the practice fields in summer doing two days in camp when it was 105 degrees. And this is also a true story. We'd be sitting in the locker room getting ready to go out for the second practice, and the stereo was going, and they would have a PSA to go check on the elderly and bring your pets inside. And we're about to go have a 2.5 hour practice. I'm like, wait a minute, you know, raising my hand again.
Something doesn't
seem right about this.
That's
but,
awesome.
But we'd be out on the practice fields and the FedEx planes are flying over.
Yeah.
Be like, that looks cool.
Yeah. So, and now look at you.
Yeah.
Talking to Chris Powers, former Memphis tight end here on the show. Didn't you have like a European sabbatical or something?
No. Well, yeah. So we went over there for almost 3 years. We lived in Dusseldorf, Germany. And FedEx has a pilot domicile that was in Cologne. They had to live within 100 miles of Cologne. The main sort facility they have over there is in Paris. So it's all intra-European flying. So we did that for about 3 years. Just a little adventure. The kids were 1 and 2.
Yeah.
In Germany, once they reach, I think it's 6 years old.
Yeah.
By law, they're required to be in school. I mean, I guess that's the same law here, right?
I mean,
we haven't. Well, no, we're not interested in that.
I'm just saying, like, we can get away with that here,
right? Yeah, and we haven't tested that to see if that's actually the law here.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But the idea was that we'd go over there and travel a bunch before the kids had to be in school, so we weren't tied to their school calendar.
Makes sense.
So we did that for about 3 years, and then.
But the plan was always to come back.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, family's here, job's here.
Man, that sounds like a great idea.
It was an adventure.
Just pick up and move to Germany for 3 years?
Yeah.
And was it awesome?
It was. Yeah, every month we were going somewhere, whether it was driving to Belgium, Netherlands, France, and everything's so close over there, too.
Right.
And you can fly EasyJet or Ryanair for $40 or 40 euros each way.
You drive an hour west here, you're in Jonesboro. You know, you drive an hour west there, you're
Which Jonesboro is really nice. You know, I mean,
that's how this place acts. We play them so damn much.
You can be in Paris an hour west, or you can be in Jonesboro.
That's right. Hey, you know,
I'm not saying one's better than the other, but
many people say that Jonesboro is the Paris of Arkansas.
Or you could go to Paris, Tennessee.
You could go to Paris, Tennessee. True. You know, just it's all about what you make of it, man. No question. I think I'm too late. My kids are too old now, so I can't take that sabbatical. But I was always jealous of you doing that. I was always jealous of you going out there, and now you're back, and it's nice to have you. This team, from what you see of them, what do you make of just their offense, you know, so the way they play, you know, what do you think of when you see, whether it was this week or the entire season, like what do you make of this offense?
They don't quit. They keep playing. I mean, they took a bunch of shots from Arkansas early, got down by 18.
Yeah.
And then they kept coming back. So that's the biggest thing. I think when you're playing teams that are in big games, you got to go out and you got to make plays. Big time players make big time plays in big games. We've all heard that, right?
Yeah.
And it's true.
Yeah.
And once you start to do that, you start to kind of believe in it. And when you're an underdog in this game, is somebody needs to go out and make a play so everybody starts believing. And that's how it was for Tennessee when the Tennessee game when we beat them. So when we kicked that game off, maybe there were 15 guys who believed we had a chance, right? But then we got through the first quarter and we were still with them. All right, well, now we picked up 10 more. Now we got 25 guys on our sideline. And as the game progresses, guys keep making plays to keep you hanging in it, hanging around, and more people buy in. By the fourth quarter, when we went out for that last drive, I guarantee you there were 75, 85 guys on the sideline who thought we could beat them.
Mm.
And then you've got that momentum.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest thing, is just going out and making plays. And I mean, what makes this offense go, you were talking about it earlier, is Lewis's legs.
Yep.
We don't win that game Saturday unless without him
yep.
and being able to run.
Yes.
And he look, he did what he needed to do throwing the ball.
Exactly.
He made some plays and avoided costly turnovers. Without his legs, yeah.
I think in college it's like there aren't that many.
Well, the clown car thing was. I mean,
that was a little much.
Yeah,
I just meant that in terms of chaos. You know,
you're on a roll. Clown car, and then the cartoon. And then Jarvis with Jabba the Hutt, right?
Yeah, that was Jarvis. Let me tell you,
that was about 5 minutes of stellar radio. Hey Brad, you may want to record that. Yeah,
is that for the Marconi?
That's for the. We want to send that 5 minutes out.
The only problem is that Wolo had it a second down. It was third down.
It was even bigger.
It was even bigger than a second down run.
Well, so combine Wolo's call with your 5 minutes. And I think.
By the way, I say the same thing about college basketball. It's all stupid. It's just like, I don't mean that like an intelligence way. It's just like, it's wacky. It's like, you know, you turn on Saturday morning cartoons.
Well, it's more fun, right?
No, it's 100% more fun.
It's same with baseball, right?
Yes.
You go to a Major League Baseball game, and those guys are ridiculous in the infield making plays.
Yes.
And you go watch, like, the College World Series.
Oh, it's like, it's like a different sport.
You can't feel the ground ball. LSU, Florida, doesn't matter who they are. There's a good chance that they're going to boot it or throw
Facts.
It away.
The pitcher hasn't located the strike zone in four hitters. Like
that was another one where Arkansas got clipped. The fly ball a couple of years ago, and then this year they couldn't throw it to the right base.
Yeah, like that. I mean, I will say, and we're not in that building, so it's hard. But like the coaching of not taking care of the ball from that Arkansas running back, like. That just seems like the most fun. And I know Memphis punched it out, but my God,
look,
man.
They have a long history of that.
They
right?
do.
Clint Sterner?
Yeah. Wow.
Remember that?
He was signed. Right? I was looking for him on Twitter this week.
It's in Houston.
I didn't see him say anything. He didn't have a single tweet about
X.
it. Yeah, sorry. X.
Yeah, so hey, listen to this. So I got an email.
Are you auditing me?
I got an email, and it said somebody's tried to log into your account, mm-hmm. right? You probably get those too.
I've had before.
Yeah, and so I logged into X, and the last tweet. What do you call them now?
Posts.
Posts? Okay. Yeah. So the last post I made was when my 9-year-old son was born. Here's the thing. That was 9 years ago. when was that? Is what John was about to say. I'll finish that for him.
How dare
it was
you.
9 years ago. My 9-year-old son
He's
was born 9
me.
Years
He's
ago.
He's clocking me, man.
So,
unbelievable.
So I go back and I start reading. This was when I was doing the radio, too. So I go back and I start reading all my posts. I couldn't believe how witty I was. Smart.
You're pretty good.
Hey, it's a struggle now. I'm almost 50, so everything takes a little bit longer.
No, you're
getting out of bed.
You're pretty good.
So I enjoyed reading all my posts from a long time ago.
But we're not going to get you back? We're not going to get your thoughts anymore?
Well, probably not. I don't know. I don't have that much to say.
By the way, this is breaking news. Bruce Pearl is retiring.
Is that out?
As Auburn's coach, according to Gary Parrish, and his son is taking over the school.
Whoa!
Taking over the school.
Taking over the job.
All right, that's
taking
a little aggressive, but hey.
Auburn has a new president.
If he's anything like Bruce, I bet he could do it.
No, he's taking over as coach, taking over the program there. So just a little brute force from Bruce, I would
okay.
say. You know, because you getting his son the job.
Next chapter, right?
Yeah, yeah, we'll see. There's some talk about that next chapter, but that is some breaking news. But yeah, I think, you know, I spoke on that. The spiritual element, and I think you because like the first 3 weeks, who knows what Memphis is? You know they're playing, you know Georgia State, Troy, and Chattanooga, and I know
tune-up games.
Back in the day, those would not be tune-up games, but they are tune-up games now. So I don't think we really got a full view of what they were. All right, they were under major duress in this one. They were down 28-10, and I mean I don't know if you've been it was the largest comeback in Division I this year, 18. Seems kind of light. I mean, I guess we're early in the season, but I don't like what's happening on that sideline when you're down 28-10 against an SEC team. Like, is it you talked about getting guys to believe? Feels like maybe if you had the whole team believing at the beginning, you lost those guys. So, what's happening on the sideline in that moment?
They had to score, right? So they scored, I think, going into the half. They
yes.
got a touchdown,
yes.
and then they got the ball coming out in the second half, and that had to happen. Those two things had to happen. But again, you just fall back on your ability to make plays and your confidence that you have in your teammates to go out there and make plays. And you make enough of them and you turn the momentum. And Arkansas, so they were up, what, 28 in the second quarter?
Yeah.
3 points the rest of the game.
Yeah, amazing.
So, you know, you can say what you want about the defense on that mm-hmm. last drive with Washington running all over them, but they only gave up 3 points.
I mean,
the second quarter on. So,
yeah.
One of my Arkansas buddies texted me. during that drive, and he goes, "Don't worry, we're going to fumble it."
Oh.
He knew it was coming.
He did.
Right? Like I said, long history.
that's absolutely right. And then, of course, you know, the big thing here is, and we're talking to Chris Powers here, former Memphis tight end, you have to almost stamp this win. Like, you have, to me, it's like, go make the American championship game. Like, I mean,
you have to now.
It should make it more likely, because you're that caliber of team. To be able to hold Arkansas to 3 points in the second half with that quarterback, like, come on. You got to be that kind of team to do that.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, third or fourth in the conference, you know, we need to be in the championship game.
Yeah.
For sure.
You could host it. I mean, you're in a position, because you're getting South Florida, Tulane, and Navy at home.
At home. Yeah.
So that helps. Massive.
Huge. Yeah. So now you got to take care of business.
Yeah. And if they, you know, if they do that, obviously, Silverfield's name is going to come up for some jobs. There's no way that it won't. But I think that's the other part of this that, like, you know, if the Memphis basketball coach leaves, I'm worried. Like, whether it's Penny or whoever it is, like, because their place in the college basketball universe, I think, has shifted dramatically based on NIL and some other things. And the league is so bad. If Ryan Silverfield took a Power Four job next season or after this season because they went undefeated and made the playoff or whatever, Memphis football is going to have its pick.
Yeah, and I would say that about basketball too, right?
Okay.
I mean, and Penny and Ryan, love them both, right? But again, the brand now is bigger than one guy, right? So if Ryan gets an opportunity and he moves on, yeah, there'll be a lot of interest in this job because of the resources that are allocated to it.
I mean, honestly, Memphis football could get a sitting head coach. I think from a similarly rated sort of, like, if there was like an up and coming American coach, I think Memphis could get an American coach. I truly do. You know, Sun Belt, Conference USA. I think Memphis football could do that. I don't know if Memphis basketball could get a sitting head coach from like a, you know, like a real.
It depends how much you pay him.
Yeah. Again, right? I don't know.
What are you willing to commit?
I don't know the answer to
that.
Hey,
we could get a lot of guys.
I used to know the answer to that. I used to know that, like, Memphis basketball would spend whatever to get whoever. But now it really does feel like, you know, they understand that their path forward is going to be throwing as much as we possibly can into this football thing. And I mean, how can you argue with that decision right now in terms of what this program has done the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years, being on ABC, winning these kinds of, like they're
yeah,
validating
we've
those
seen,
decisions.
We've seen the results of commitment to the program.
Exactly. So. It'd be one thing if you're throwing good money at bad and you're not getting these wins and you're not getting, you know, the opportunities and the moments, but you're getting these. Now, when the American, I think that's sort of that's the charge. That's got to happen, but I do. I think Memphis football is in such a remarkably healthy place. It'd be great for Silverfield to get another job, because that continues sort of Memphis is establishing itself as this could be a place for, you go from here to Florida State, you go from here to Virginia Tech, you go from here to a premier SEC job. You know, it's like a thoroughly.
Well, it means we're winning, right?
Yeah.
If your coach is always leaving, you're winning.
That's right.
But you know, and it's not a sure thing either that you replace the guy with somebody who's just
as
good. Like, look at Arkansas State. You remember who they had? Who did they have? Brad, help us out. They had three or four guys.
It was Hugh Freeze,
Gus Malzahn. And
they had the dude that went to Auburn, I think Harsin maybe.
Yeah, so they kept turning over.
Yeah.
And they kept hitting home runs because they kept winning.
Yes.
But eventually your luck runs out.
No,
so,
I mean, it does. But I trust the decision makers with Memphis
football.
Yes, I agree
with that.
You know, I they really, whoever's doing the football thing, like, has been, they really haven't missed. I mean, because Silverfield, like, he hasn't done as much as I think we had hoped he would do by now, but he's got a chance to do it now, you know, and he's still been objectively a good coach here. Has he been the greatest? No, but he still has those opportunities. So every hire has been good at the very least,
right.
And in some cases, great. Like, you find Norvell. Norvell's the highest paid offensive coordinator. See, that's the kind of thing Memphis football can do. They can go get the highest paid offensive coordinator in Mike Norvell.
Blake Anderson's who you guys were thinking of.
And he was another one.
Yeah.
He was another one that was at Arkansas State. You know, you can go get the highest paid OC.
Yep.
Can Memphis basketball get, like, the highest paid assistant in college basketball? You know? I mean, that guy's probably got a job in waiting somewhere. You know what I mean? I'm just saying, that's the difference.
Yeah. I mean, again, it depends how much you want to pay him.
Yeah.
Right? You throw a lot of money at him and people listen.
What about a Jeff? I mean, before he would have went to state, a Jeff Lebby type, you know, the hottest coordinator out there.
That's who I would hire.
Yeah, that's
I
mean, who you go get.
You know, I don't know who.
That kind of cat.
What's Barry Odom doing these days?
He's coaching Purdue currently.
Chris Powers, his last tweet actually was Barry Odom.
Was it?
Yeah, it was his last post.
That's
was
the
it?
Coach.
No, it wasn't.
Well, so this goes back.
Are you
back,
tied with Barry?
This goes back. No, I've actually played against him when we played Missouri in 96. Oh. He was a linebacker. That's the first time I had any awareness of Barry Odom. But then with the – and I forget who was – who had left. Maybe it was Norvell.
No, it was Fuente.
Was it Fuente?
It was Fuente.
And so John is trying to get the scoop, and he's reaching out to everybody.
Calling everybody.
What have you heard? What have you heard? You know, what do you got?
You're working the phones.
Yeah, and so I just kept texting him. I'm hearing Barry Odom. And then,
you know,
a few hours later, but then it lasted into after Norvell.
Yeah.
Like, it's been, how long ago was that? 15
years? Yeah, Barry Odom was again. He was.
Barry Odom.
He mentioned after Norvell left.
Barry Odom has been a candidate for every opening at the university.
Everything. Yes.
As far as John Martin's concerned in the last 15 years.
It is crazy. It is crazy. Like, I did that when Fuente got hired. And I would not, when I broke the news that Fuente got hired, I would not do that today. Like, I did not. I was actually talking.
Oh, you broke the news?
I did break the news.
Okay.
That was my moment. That was my claim to fame.
On Jeff's show?
No, not on Jeff's show. I don't think I was even there. That got me to Jeff's show eventually.
Okay.
Directly, indirectly. This was 2011.
Oh, wow.
So I was still at Memphis. I was still at the university. And I got a text from somebody literally just like Barry Odom. It was just Justin Fuente. And I'm like, who in the hell is this guy?
But you ran with it anyway.
Well, I was talking to people who, I won't name them, but they were very intimately aware of the search. And it was down to him and Jim McElwain. Remember Jim mm-hmm. McElwain?
And ended up at Florida.
Yeah, he ended up at ultimately Florida.
Thank God.
Colorado State,
then Florida.
It hired him, you know, in that exact, you know, coaching timeline. But they said that McElwain was the first choice, according to my people back then. But, like, there was a hang up on salary pool for his assistants. And then they ended up going with Fuente, who was a, he wasn't even a, alone as the OC. He was a co mm-hmm. offensive coordinator. But I just got it from I won't name the guy. Very nice guy. Love him to death because he helped me. But he didn't really have it. Like I don't think he was trying to tell me to run with it. He was just kind of saying this is what he was hearing. Luckily, I ended up being correct. but yeah, I would not do that. Like if somebody texts me today like that, oh, Barry Odom or you know whoever it is, you know I'd have to be a little bit more professional. But back then, I could take a chance.
Yeah,
I was nobody. I had like 800 followers on X right. Twitter back then. So I took a chance. You know, I swung for the fences and I got some contact, and there it went. You know, and the rest was history. I do want to tell you, I broke Tom Bowen's hire as well, and that was also before Jeff's show.
Congratulations.
So I haven't really done anything since. That was 12 years ago. That was 12 years ago. Have you watched a lot of teams in the American? Like, have you watched South Florida?
Not really. I saw some of the highlights from the Florida game.
There weren't many for anybody.
Well,
that's a disgusting football game.
Yeah, so like, I've watched a little bit.
Do you think they have a good team?
Florida or South Florida?
No, we know Florida doesn't.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're okay. Look, any Saturday, it's a toss up. All right, I'm not going to say it's a clown show like you. That's a terrible
analogy. I'm getting the gladiator speech here.
Really bad. But yeah, I mean, you line it up and play. And those guys are on scholarship too, and they can make plays.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're off a little bit, and they're playing a good game, and, yeah, anybody can beat anybody.
Yeah. Again, Tulane here, South Florida here, Navy
Which I
here.
I was surprised that Tulane didn't put up more of a fight against Ole Miss.
Yeah, that was surprising for sure. Yeah, because you, normally in those games, they've always kind of shown they belong.
Yeah.
But, I mean, maybe Ole Miss is a cut above. I mean, Lane's done a pretty good job.
I mean, he's got it rolling for sure.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, Tulane has been good lately, too. So,
yeah.
I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah. Florida has a mess on their hands, man.
Yeah, that hurts a little bit. I grew up a Gators fan in Florida.
Yeah.
My dad went to Florida, and, yeah, we still like the Gators a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I would call Lane for sure. I would give Lane anything he wanted to try to get. I don't know if he'd leave Ole Miss.
Well, so Napier's had 4 years.
He's had time.
Right? So back up 20 years ago, before NIL, before the transfer portal. And what did everybody say with a coach? Oh, you got to give him 4 or 5 years to get his guys in, mm-hmm. right? Because they're going out and getting high school athletes.
Yep.
Those guys got to develop. You got to, you know, the whole thing, right? And now 4 years is an eternity.
Yeah, no, I mean, no question.
You can turn that thing around in a year.
Yes.
You can see progress.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, yeah, Memphis has 70 new players, but it's like they have 70 new good players.
Yeah, they go get the ones that they want, right, yes. that fit the system and culturally that yes. that work in the locker room. But, yeah, 4 years and not having any success, really,
yeah.
that's tough. I don't know how that ends up. Probably not well.
Last thing before we let you go, we really appreciate your time. It's Chris Powers here, former Memphis tight end. The NIL part of this, the fact that that is an Arkansas team that we can argue about the quality of the team in the end, that's a $20 million, $25 million plus roster. There's just no two ways around it. We know Arkansas is one of the most well-funded programs in the entire SEC. How much sweeter and you know, I guess more difficult does it make that upset, knowing that I don't know what Memphis is in. I think it's good for where they are in the group of six. But like,
yeah, I think it's near the top.
Right.
Out of that group.
Because, yeah. like, you know, it is. But it's still going to – you're still going to be 3 to 4 times, you know – more at Arkansas. I don't know. Like, I don't know what Tennessee was paying its players back in 96, but it just feels like today, 20, 25 million, it makes it even sweeter because you know on paper, no question, you're outmatched in that regard.
Yeah, for sure. It's just, again, it's just amazing what Memphis has been able to do with the resources that they have. The landscape now, it's, I mean, thank God for the Smiths.
Yeah.
Right? And the Smith family and the investment that they've made in the stadium and the program and the city. That 777 flyover was cool. Did you see that?
I did.
Yeah.
I did. Cool. Yes.
So
they did it right.
So we were down on the field before the game. I was with my wife and two boys, and we were watching them warm up. And then we go over. The team had warmed up, and they go back in the locker room to get ready to run out. So we're standing there. The kids like to give the players 5 when they run by, and my phone rang.
Mm.
And I know the 3 guys that were flying the airplane. They had 2 pilots and then a safety pilot to make sure they don't get too low, that type of thing. And my phone rings, and it's the safety pilot who's up in the 777. And I answer, and he goes, "Hey, our ground communication with the guy who was supposed to tell us if we're early, if we're late, to time the flyover, we completely lost him." I'm like, "All right, I got you." So I went over to the side of the field, and I'm like, "All right, the band is on the field. The flag corps is out.
Wow.
The anthem just started."
Unbelievable.
And it was fast. I mean,
yeah.
You didn't notice that. I know you didn't.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, so they played the anthem fast. So I'm singing it to him so he knows where we are in the national anthem. Yeah, it was not a good rendition. Nobody who heard is going to want me for the next home game doing that. But, yeah, so we got him for the flyover. Yeah, right. They were a little late, but it wasn't too bad.
No, that's awesome, man.
So I was happy to save the day. What, but the FWS on the bottom of the airplane, did you see that?
Yes.
Frederick W.
Yes,
Smith?
Yeah. Yes. Great touch.
Yeah, it's pretty
By cool. the way, you did in fact post on December 3rd, 2015, Barry Odom.
And that was my last post?
It was one of them. You posted you also posted a photo of Barry Manilow. I think you were just going through your famous Barry.
I believe he was also a candidate at that time.
Yeah, and they ended up.
A candidate for what? I'm not sure.
They ended up going with fortuitously Mike Norvell, so it worked.
Oh,
out.
Oh, good choice.
Yeah,
good thing I wasn't on the hiring committee.
Yeah, and you did say I absolutely love it. Home run, University of Memphis Press. So 1 for 1 there.
David Rudd.
That's right.
My boy David Rudd.
That's right. Yeah. Great president for the university, no question about it.